From the hills of central New York and the heart of the Finger Lakes, this is Frankly Speaking. I'm your host, Frank Russ. Welcome to our 12th season of Frankly Speaking, the longest-running podcast focused on the turfgrass industry. This 12-year run would not be possible without the support of our longtime sponsors, Dryject Services, Frost Spray Technology, and the Plant Food Company. For those of you who are regular listeners to this program, you know that we cover a wide range of topics that are mostly interesting to us and our sense of what is important to amplify for the turfgrass industry. Our great sponsors allow us the freedom to do so, and for that, we will be forever grateful. Of course, none of this would be possible if no one listened. So I have the same admiration for our listeners as I do for our sponsors, and I'm forever grateful for your interest in the topics and people we cover here at Frankly Speaking. Our long-form interview model remains a mainstay that allows our listeners not just to get to know our guests, but also what our guests think about emerging issues or major topics affecting the turfgrass industry. Our guest on this episode of Frankly Speaking is Brian Palmer, the director of courses at Tara ET Golf Club and Tiaia Lynx Golf Club in New Zealand. Brian is another New York State local to be on the show, hailing from Shenango Valley, New York. The son of a golf course superintendent and graduate of my alma mater, SUNY Cobleskill, Brian did a seven-year stint at Marion Golf Club, then his first superintendent's role at Shore Acres in Chicago, Illinois, where he worked with consulting architect and Cornell grad Tom Doak. That relationship eventually led to Brian being offered the lead role at Tara ET, where he now oversees three golf courses and a staff of 64. Great to have you, Brian. Thanks for taking the time to join us. We're continuing, as you just reminded me off air, Section 4 athletes here on the Frankly Speaking podcast. We had Russ Myers with Hans Golf Design in a recent episode, and you're a local Central Southern Tier talent as well. Brian, what town are you from down here in the vibrant Southern Tier?
Well, I went to Shenango Valley High School. Suburb was Port Dickinson of Binghamton, New York.
Okay. So Shenango Valley,
yep,
where the State Park golf course is.
You know it.
Did you work there?
No, I used to mountain bike there all the time. And I was just there when I was home in November with my brother and his dogs and my dad. And spent a lot of time there as a kid.
And, you know, for a lot of people that don't realize this, the state park system in New York is second to none. That is an absolutely beautiful state park that I don't think if you're from around here, you even hear about.
No, and we talk about it all the time to have that a few minutes drive from my parents' house, and my brother's even closer. Yeah, it's amazing.
Okay, so you didn't work there on the golf course. How did you get interested in studying turfgrass or working on golf courses?
Well, my father was a superintendent. He was at a municipal course owned by the city of Binghamton. And I mean, I started working there first and really just enjoyed the space, you know, just a giant backyard as a kid, right? Like,
yeah,
just to get to go up there as your dad and go in the pond and catch frogs and go fishing. And then gets to the point where you actually help out and go take the carts from the maintenance facility up to the pro shop and get them staged for the day. And then go and grab trash off the course and play some golf after. And then it's like, all right, well, you're old enough to work now. Let's get you on the books. And worked there for 3 summers. I thought it was pretty cool. Didn't know if I want to do that for a living or not. I actually had to stay home for a year. I had a hand injury my senior year of high school, so I couldn't go away to school. I had to stay home for rehab and stuff. And I was a business major, and I was trapped inside, and I'm a pretty high-strung individual.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not for me. This is not going to work. And I'm just going to talk to my dad about it. And he's like, well, you should go to Cobleskill and go and learn from Mr. Emmons, you know, from Bob Emmons.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Russ and everyone else that has gone through that program knows quite well. And I remember just going up there on a visit and just going to the greenhouses. I remember in the middle of winter and seeing a bunch of people that were like me. And I was like, this is probably where I'm supposed to be. So
that's perfect. And of course, from Binghamton, you got I-88, the road to Burma. That takes you to, I think they built that road for one guy, right? That one senator from Binghamton that got tired of riding on whatever route it is that goes that way between
Binghamton. It's Route 7. That's brutal.
It's brutal. So they built Route 88. Now you're up at Route 88 studying at Cobleskill with Bob. Did you do a few internships when you were there?
Yeah, as we've spoken of before. And I've got some roots up in the Finger Lakes. So my brother is at Cornell University in the Wilson Science Lab. And my parents have a place in the west side of the lake in Seneca Falls. And I wasn't quite sure of the sort of golf courses that I'm at now and the places I have been. I wasn't quite sure of that stuff. So I wanted to start small. And I worked at Seneca Falls Country Club for Thad Thompson. And Thad is now in Batavia, I think.
No, Thad is in Buffalo at Terry Hills Country Club.
He's in Buffalo. Okay.
Yeah.
He's a hoop. So that was cool working for him. And I was about 20, maybe 19. I don't know. And so then, worked at Country Club of Darien in Connecticut with a couple Cobalt Skill graduates that were assistants down there. And then worked for another Cobalt Skill graduate at the Pine Ridge Golf Club on Long Island, Brian Gillespie.
Oh, yeah.
He's out, I think, in Noyak now. So I worked for B for an internship and a little grow in. Then went back there afterwards as my first full-time
gig. All right. So you had a lot of good experience. And then you sort of land a gig at Marion. And at the time, it was Schaefer, yes?
Yeah.
Russ had his own history with Matt Schaefer. So this is two straight guests talking about experiences with Matt Schaefer. So let's hear about your 6 or 7 years there, huh?
I mean, I went there because Brian, he gave me some great advice at Pine Ridge. And we were just taken over, I think, by Billy Casper Golf.
Oh.
And it wasn't looking good. They're trying to cut our budget. Yeah, and of course. I don't know. It just wasn't good. I said, what do I got to do to get in your shoes, man? And he's like, you got to get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
I said, 10-4. So I did. And I went home that night and was looking around, and they're looking for an irrigation tech at Marion. And I had just met a couple of them the year before. I was at Riviera for the, I think then it was the Nissan.
Mm-hmm.
And I had met a couple of guys that were there. And then I applied for the irrigation tech role. I went up there, I think, the next week. I got the job and then started, I think, 2 weeks later. Yeah, I worked my way up the ranks for almost 7 years, probably 6.5 years.
Yeah. And there for the Open?
No. I had to leave, man.
You left?
I left in December of 2012. And the Open was in June 13. So it was just one of those things. I remember, because I was with Matt for so long, and I remember hearing about these conversations about like when you're ready to go. And he's like, listen, he's like, you're ready to go and be a superintendent. You don't want to stick around here. Because at the time, Aaron McCurdy, who's now the super at Short Acres, was there and was in front of me. And he was going to be the super for the Open. And then, you know, I would have had to stay another year after that. And he's like, you're ready to go. If you want to start interviewing and stuff now, you can. And if you get a job, great. And if you don't, well, then, you know, I got a place here and you can go and stay through the Open. So I started interviewing, was fortunate enough to secure an interview at Short Acres and flew out there a couple times. And I landed that job, and myself, my dad, and my dog, Frank, we drove out there. And I started in January 2013.
So that's when we got to spend some time together when you were at Short Acres. And I want to talk about that place. What a fascinating joint that place was. Interesting experience taking over for, you know, sort of a really historic property that's been old. When you were there, you designed and built a new maintenance facility. But I want to start with the fact that it wasn't just you from Marion. It was Curtis. It was Bordner. It was like the whole pile of you guys from Marion took over Chicago in 1 year. And I don't know if those guys are still at those properties. So what did you make it at when all you guys were getting those jobs?
Oh, I just think they like what the younger guys were doing too. And it was, you know, Scott Vincent at Alwencia came from out east somewhere. I forget at the time now. And there was a bunch of guys that were doing a pretty good job that were there for 25 or 30 years and they were starting to retire. And I think Curtis had gone into Old Elm maybe 2011 or so. And Scott was the year after. And, you know, that certainly helped out. They said, boy, you know, and all those clubs are in cahoots, you know, and boy, we sure like what's happening. What's going on? Where are you guys coming from? And then there was one common link, and that was they had worked for Matt Schaefer at Marion. So I was already interviewing at a couple clubs, and Scott said, hey, have you heard of Short Acres? And I've always been a bit of a golf history architecture nut. And I said, hell yeah. He said, well, it's going to open up here if it hasn't already. And I said, yeah, I'm in. So just fell in love. I remember calling Matt, I think it was in the third hole. And I was just like, what do I got to do to get this job? He's like, oh, well, just be yourself. Like, you'll be all right. And I was like, Matt, you don't get it. This place is off the charts good. This is better than I ever would have, you know, imagined. There's plenty to do. And I said, Matt, this is insane. And he's just like, well, just be yourself and you'll be all right.
Good advice.
But I flew out there that day, I remember, and I just had my notepad and I just walked the course all day and flew back to Marion that night. But yeah, it was just an amazing place.
So let's take a minute and see if we can explore your architecture geek stuff. Where does Short Acres fit in Rainer's design? What I remember from the several times I walked around that place with you, and we walked with you, which I know you like doing.
Walk.
Yeah, you got to walk. And you know, it was filled with ravines that you started shaving, and then I just loved you'd get the old roller out, and you basically said that guy was always out rolling something with that old Ford tractor pulling that three-gang roller behind it. And that place looked like it was sort of built to do exactly what you did to it. Where is that place in Rainer's career?
So that was very early on. West Hampton Golf Club was his first. Shore Acres was his second. They're both established in 1916. Shore Acres was never open until 1919. So that was one of the first. And I think there's a few giveaways. And one was the bunker in front of the short, number 12, yeah. In the hole there. It's kind of like a shark's tooth. And again, this is what I've been told by a lot of architects, that that's not Rainer, that's McDonald's. And he hadn't quite found his style yet.
So he did the place with C.B. McDonald.
No. It was all Seth Rainer, but still trying to find his way. That was the one bunker that people said, that's not something he would have done later.
Refresh my memory. He was an engineer, right? He wasn't necessarily an agronomist of any kind or a golfer of any kind.
No, I don't think he ever played golf. The one chapter of George Botto's book, I think he's known as Seth the Surveyor, because he was living in Southampton, New York, and Charles Blair McDonald, he needed a civil engineer and surveyor to help out National Golf Links of America, and that's where they met. Hmm.
So what was it about Shore Acres that you liked the most? I mean, obviously those ravines were something else, but it wasn't necessarily designed as a championship course. I thought I remember you saying it was a couples course or not necessarily the players course. Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, of course. So on Wencia, which is just to the west, that's 1894. That's the country club. And then there was an old article that I had found because I was there for the centennial. Mm. So we did a bunch of digging with Anthony Pioppi and created a pretty cool history book. Mm. And what did they say? It was like, they're sick of the screaming and crying children of Onwencia, so they created Shore Acres to escape with the couples. So one of the busy days of the week was actually on Sunday, where you have lunch, go out and play with your wife, and then have the barbecue on the bluff afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then shortly thereafter, they said, man, we're getting sick of our wives. And they created Old Elm, the men's club. And there's still like 60 or 70 at all three of them.
And where does Chicago Golf Club fall into that little pattern? That must have been up there with Old Elm, where they went with nobody else.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, that's in Wheaton, though. That's almost an hour away from up on the North Shore there.
Okay.
But there's quite a few members from Shore Acres and Old Elm that play down at Chicago Golf Club.
Okay, so you're from the Southern Tier, upstate New York, northeastern area. You work in Philly. Philly certainly got some heat and you get some stress down there. But then you go to Chicago and now you got POA along the lakeshore. And I don't know if the winter injury hit the area at the time you were there. And I don't know how Shore Acres came through, but how did you like growing grass for the period of time you grew it in Chicago?
I did have a lot of winter kill, for the record. And then that 2013, that was scary when your whole golf course just smells like rotten hay. Uh-huh. How was it? It was good, man. It was really tough. You know, I talked to Aaron quite a bit, and they're having a cold winter, and, you know, it doesn't get warm there forever.
Yeah, they got an air conditioner off the coast.
The prevailing wind in the spring is off the lake. I mean, it's freezing. We used to go, my old assistant who was at Old Elm, and they were just a couple miles from the lake. He's like, every time you come down here to get equipment, like you have a beanie on, you dress like it's the Arctic. I'm like, it is up there, man. And I would go to Chicago in the spring, and there's a 20-degree swing. You know, like as soon as you get across the highway off I-94 there, it's at least 20 degrees. Huh. So it's really cold. It's hard to get things moving. You're always making a mess in the mud. You're trying to get stuff done, but you're trying to not have a bunch of that collateral damage at the same time. So it's tricky. It's great in the summer. It can get a little sticky and humid, but really nothing compared to Philly. And then before you know it, I mean, great fall there, September, October. And then before you know it, all of a sudden it's winter again. It's a pretty short season.
Certainly compared to what you have now. Listen, Brian, and when we get back after this message from our sponsors, we're going to talk about your trip around the world. I'm with Brian Palmer, the director of courses for Tara Edie Golf Club and Tiaria Lynx Golf Club down under in New Zealand. I'm Frank Rossi. This is Frankly Speaking. We'll be right back. Here's a shout out to our original sponsor, Dryjack Services, that's been with us from the beginning. I remember when I first saw the Dryjack Services at work and immediately thought this was a brilliant idea to blend water injection cultivation with sand injection. I love the Hydroject from Toro, and I needed to get sand into the profile. Dryject was a perfect solution. You should look at Dryject Services as well for solutions to your problems. Contact your local Dryject Services representative or head over to www.dryject.com. Plant Food Company and I have a long relationship stemming from the days of my research at the Bethpage State Park. My conversations with Tom Weiner turned out to be great theater for many on the Bethpage staff and helped me see the ethos of the company. They care about their customers' needs and are invested in the products they sell. You can't go wrong with plant food products, and their support is best in class. Learn more about the Plant Food Company by contacting your local rep or visiting them at plantfoodco.com. Welcome back to Frankly Speaking. Frank Rossi here with Brian Palmer. Brian's on the other side of the world in New Zealand at Tara'iti Golf Club and Tiari Links Golf Club, the director of two golf courses now. Okay, so Chicago, as you said, and I can attest to, has its period of time when it's a really tough place to grow grass. And at the period of time you were there, a lot of winter injury going through, and you talked about your experience. Then you built a beautiful new maintenance facility, right? It looks like, wow, man, this is a good job. Brian's made this into a good job settling in here. Next thing I know, I'm coming out to visit. You're off to New Zealand with your dog and your wife, or maybe girlfriend at the time. So how did it come about you even had the opportunity to go and do this?
So we did some work at Shore Acres, what you might call a sympathetic restoration, really just trying to bring the corridors back to what they used to be. Mm-hmm. And the architect there is Tom Doak, consulting architect, is Renaissance Golf, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I think that and Wensia were the first two courses when he left Pete Dye in like 1993 or 1994. So he and his associates have a long history with the club. And mm-hmm. he knows I like to golf and travel. And we became pretty close. And every year they have an event that's called the Renaissance Cup. Mm-hmm. And it's at a new course that opens in the U.S. or in the world, wherever it might be. And he said, hey, I got an extra spot in this place in New Zealand. I said, yeah, let's go. And at the time, one of my assistants from Shore Acres was actually down here helping out for the off season. So I came down and played golf and was like, holy moly, what a place to live. And I had already come here before. I actually proposed to my wife in the South Island the year before. Club was closed. Got to meet the general manager, Matt Guzik, and Rick Kane and his wife, Suzanne. And Rick just had his birthday party for a couple of days down here. He just turned the big 80. So okay. He had essentially a 4-day party. So yeah, got to meet them.
And that's the owner?
Well, that's the owner. Well, the founder. And now it's a members club at Tara'iti. Okay. And then here at Lynx, which is where I'm based today, he is the majority owner.
Okay.
So yeah, I got to meet everybody. I remember they played at Short Acres, I think a year later. I got them out there and caught up with them a bit. And then about a year later, I got a phone call say, hey, yeah, the job's going to be open. I've got the interest in applying for it. And I said, hell yeah. And that was about it. And then once I secured the position, we got our visas and here we are.
How old was the place when you got there? How long had it been there when Tom first built it?
So its official opening's October 2015. I came here in, I think, August 2018. Okay. So it was still fresh.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, it was still growing in. And what was the motivation? I mean, it looks like an absolutely spectacular location. What was the motivation? Was it sort of abandoned dunes kind of situation? It's like there was always this really good area out there of sand where you could have golf, but nobody did? Or was there something else going on that looked like it was driving the development of a golf course out there?
Rick had played, you know, the top 100 and had been around the world playing and really loved Lynx courses and Fescue in particular. And, you know, he just told the story a couple nights ago at one of the parties about he was looking for some land down here and he was flying over this block of land when someone in his office called him and said, hey, there's this, you know, this land that just became available. And it turns out he was actually flying over it in his helicopter.
So interesting.
And he wanted to hire Tom and said, I want a top 100 golf course. And he certainly delivered. So it was always meant to be a small place for 20, 30 or 40 members, whatever the number is, mm-hmm. and still quite small. But he wanted a very small place, but everyone came down and fell in love. And now it's a different animal now. It's a full membership. And then off the success of that, they created this down here at Lynx just a couple of years ago.
All right. So let's talk about growing grass there, Brian. What are you growing? Is it, in fact, cool season grasses? And, you know, for folks that aren't thinking this through, the further you're on the north end of the North Island, right? In the southern hemisphere, as you move north, it gets warmer.
Mm-hmm. So we're about an hour and a half north of Auckland, 5 hours from the very tip top of the country where the two oceans meet. Mm-hmm. So this area is known by folks here as the winterless north, pretty much frost free. We grow everything except for, I think, mangoes and papaya. But bananas, citrus, pineapple.
Figs.
A lot of figs, man.
Love yeah, I know the you figs. Love, figs, love when you texted me
olives.
Fig pictures, yes.
Yeah. So, no, it's a good place to grow grass.
Okay, why? Is it dry?
Pretty dry. It's on sand. You got good drainage. Got a lot of fescue. We've got some like amenity lawns and some walk paths that are warm season turf. Actually, have a, in the back of our nursery here, we have a warm season trial right now with Seashore Paspalum, a couple different zoysias, a couple different Bermudas, and I think there's two Kikuyus in there.
How's the quality of the water you got?
It's all right. We pump out of a stream in the winter and we fill a couple massive reservoirs. But I mean, the pH is about right, a little high in iron, a little high in bicarbs, but you know, it's not the worst.
Now, do you have fescue putting greens?
As a matter of fact, we do, Frank.
Okay. So did you work with Chris Haspel or was it Tom Mead working with Doak at the time?
I don't think either of those two gentlemen were involved with the project at all.
Okay. That's interesting.
My predecessors, CJ Crusher, came here from Bandon. He used to work with Ken Nice.
All right. Yeah.
And then he came down here to Langs. He's a bit of a development construction guy. So he's actually in Mexico now working on that new project outside of Ensenada with Tom.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. So he went off to work with Tom.
Yep. So he's a super there.
Okay. All right. Now we're going to talk about managing fescue putting greens. Okay.
Yeah.
As somebody who managed, you know, I think you had bent grass at Marion. You had bent poa, maybe more poa at Shore Acres, maybe more bent grass. I know you played around with poa cure there a little bit. I think I recall that.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you tell anybody that had to make the transition from the surfaces that most of us in northern areas, you know, bent poa to fescue? Just philosophically, what are your instincts telling you to do for those other grasses that you shouldn't do for fescue?
I mean, I think with fescue or just making that transition to, you know, if you're growing bent grass to Bermuda or anything, is just to be observant, you know, and don't listen to the noise. You know, people talk about fine fescue being, you know, essentially a brittle grass and you can't do too much to it and it doesn't like being too wet, too dry, anything. And it's like, just go watch and see how it reacts to your practices. But we groom quite a bit. We mow. I like to mow. I mean, we probably mow 5-6 days a week and probably rolling greens 4 days a week.
What height?
4.5 mils, like somewhere around 170.
Okay. And when you look in, when you're staring down at that canopy, is it a dense canopy or are you looking at some sand through that fescue?
Yeah, it's super thin. I mean, even our densest turf is still quite thin for anyone that grows anything else.
Right.
Yeah, it just looks like a wiry, sort of nappy looking plant. But, and like you think to yourself, you're like, how is this going to play well? And then you roll a ball on it in the morning, in the afternoon, evening, whatever. It's still smooth, super firm, you know, because it likes being dry. And yeah, we dry it out and don't have to worry about the chemical inputs.
Yeah.
You know, as well, like I said, it's a good place to grow grass. I mean, pretty dry, pretty warm in the summer. We have to watch our moisture just with the lack of ozone here. Oh. We have to be careful. I mean, the canopy and ambient temperature are often 25 degrees Fahrenheit different. So,
whoa.
75 degree day, I mean, the canopy is at least 95.
Okay.
So have to be careful with moisture and just being burned. Don't cut in the afternoon. I learned that the hard way.
Okay.
It was just before Rick came in my first year and he's coming down for the season. He comes for like 6 months at a time. And one of the guys in the crew, I remember this so vividly. He's like, ah, mate, you sure I'm going to go out after Smoko and go out and cut? And I said, yeah, you should go out there and cut. He's like, it's looking dry. I was like, yeah, you'll be all right. It's not warm out, whatever. And everything was just that orange and like a any color for like 4 weeks. It takes forever to recover.
Yeah.
That's the one thing with fescue that
right.
Have to be careful how far you dry it out because it takes forever to become a green color again.
So how much rainfall do you get, Brian? And do you get distinct wet and dry periods?
We get about a meter a year. Well, last year was bang on average. It was like 980 mil in 2024.
Okay.
And yeah, very distinct periods. I mean, we can be very dry end of December, even through December, through about now. And we had 4 inches 2 weeks ago, and it looks like another 6 inches tomorrow, so like 150 mil. And then we might dry out again, and we'll get just these pretty big showers that come through. You know, it comes out of the north. It's quite warm right now. It's just, you know, we're in the fall, and it's 72 degrees. Yeah, you know, like last night and the night before. So you've got a big system coming out of the north right now, the tropics, and it'll smash us.
That kind of weather, particularly on most grasses, but I, as my experience has been with fescues as well, when they stay wet for a period of time, they will get their fair share of leaf spot. Do you have fungicides available like you would in the States, and or are you doing other things to keep the canopy dry when you can?
We spray penetrance quite a bit in the off season, like in our winter, as we call it here. So yeah, starting in the next couple of weeks through to September, spray a lot of penetrance just to keep water moving.
Okay.
But the disease wise, I mean, we get some red thread, we control with sulfates. We used to get a little bit of dollar spot, but as the plant matures, we really don't get much of really anything. Mm. Had a little leaf spot last year, actually, for the first time that I've seen it here on the fairways at Terraiti. Mm. But yeah, we can get anything you want as far as fungicides go, but everything's off-label for the most part. There are some turf stuff, but you know, there's a lot of checking with reps, or I convert, you know, as long as the active is right.
That's right.
Use a lot of the Australian websites because they have more of a turf market. So here it's, I'll get a fungicide and it could be propiconazole, but it's for wheat.
Okay.
It's for potatoes and carrots.
And you got to convert it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I don't convert it much anymore, but we'll just go over there and say, okay, that's propiconazole at 155 grams a liter. Okay, that's the same. So it's 2 liters a hectare. Go ahead. But I don't think we've sprayed a foliar on greens and surrounds on all three in probably a year.
Okay. So how many rounds do you do?
Here we did 50,000 in 2024 at Lynx across the two courses. And up there, probably did close to 8,000 or 9,000 at the original course up the road.
Yeah, so Terraiti is a more still exclusive place, and the Lynx gets a lot more play.
Yeah, so Terraiti is a members course now.
Yeah.
Where down here, there's, yeah, pretty cool hybrid model where one day one course will be a members course. Mm-hmm. So there's 600 members, and they have access to both courses, but they also have one course that's only theirs that day. Mm-hmm. And then the other course is the resort course for anyone that wants to come in and play. And then they switch. So What was the members course yesterday is the members course on the other one today.
Okay, so you have now 3 DOAC courses, is that correct?
No, the south course at Teodai Lynx is Core Crenshaw.
Okay, so when I see pictures of it, it looks like it's basically a Lynx-style sand. Are the soils the same in both of these locations, very sandy coastal properties where you didn't have to do much amending? It was sort of pushing around and plant grass on it?
Pretty much, you hit it on the head there. Yeah. Yeah, everything is very consistent. There's a couple of greens that might be a little different, but yeah, when these courses were built, they created the shapes in the golf course and then they just went hydro seeded it. Some amendments prior to, but it's a very round, uniform dune sand. I mean, it's been blowing around forever, so there's no angular particles really.
It's shifty.
Oh, it's so shifty, Frank. I went and I drove on the greens during the first aeration, just trying to work the sand in, and I had these ruts we had to top dress out with a shovel.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, shoveling sand, you know, old school and slinging it.
Oh, man.
And I got a steamroller in. I got a 1-ton just to pack them. And so I learned quickly that it is really shifty. So we went away from verti draining or from any sort of a deep tine aeration to try to let them pack pro core and just amend that top little bit. And then we used the brushes on a roller to brush the sand in the holes.
Okay, we'll wrap up this segment, but I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, you did the DOAC restoration at Shore Acres. You got Terraiti and another property down there that's Tom. How does Tom's design work for you as a superintendent? I know I typically see him, Core Crenshaw, Gill, a lot of them sort of have that same motif, if you will. They shave a lot of grass down. Certainly Shore Acres was like that. I don't know if these new properties are like that. Can you talk a little bit about what Tom did there and how that sort of impacted growing fescues that you need a little bit more space because of the traffic tolerance? Maybe I, you know, listen to the noise too, but I think I worry a little bit where a lot of traffic gets focused with the fescues. Talk a little bit about working for DOAC and having fescues on his properties.
Yeah, well, when you come down, I'll show you a couple spots that get literally every footstep from both golfer and caddy and the other push carts or trolleys or whatever you choose to call them. Mm-hmm. And it's great coverage. As long as they have water, Traffic doesn't really matter. Mm. It's pretty amazing. Like, that's one of those things that you're taught that, oh, I can't handle the traffic. And I'm looking at these courses that, you know, in some cases just get pummeled and, man, it's fine. So, yeah, I mean, pretty big tees. Well, I mean, all the surfaces are huge, and that's just his style, just to have different options.
Yeah.
It just really works for fescue. But for me, it's his golf courses are very engaging, you know, as a golfer and as somebody that takes care of them. It's engaging, and I'm always kind of focused on them when I'm walking down holes or I'm working or whatever I'm looking at. Where you have this beautiful Pacific Ocean, these isles all around us, you're really focused on the course.
That's pretty hard to do when it looks as beautiful as it does. I'm with Brian Palmer, the director of courses for Terraiti Golf Club and Tiaria Lynx Golf Club. I'm Frank Rossi. This is Frankly Speaking. We'll be right back. I got to meet Ken Ross and his company Frost Spray Technology about 10 years ago when we became interested in understanding the value of GPS-guided spray technology. I was not confident the major equipment managers were launching the technology properly, so I immediately gravitated towards Ken's wealth of knowledge in spray application technology and have never looked back. When I've got a question related to application technology, I reach out to the experts at Frost Spray Technology. You should too at frostserv.com. That's frostserv.com. Welcome back to Frankly Speaking. I'm with Brian Palmer, Director of Courses, Tara Eady Golf Club in TRE Lynx Golf Club. I'm sure I'm butchering that name in some way, shape, or form, Brian. But
yes, you are.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about sort of managing the golf course down there, certainly managing fescue, which is unique in its own way. Tom does his own sort of things with regard to golf course architecture. But now I want to sort of talk about sort of nuts and bolts of that thing, right? In the States, there are two big issues that are related to each other, and that is labor and automation. And when agriculture went through this a number of years ago, you know, as labor got more expensive and less plentiful, automation and investing in automation seemed to make more sense. I'm wondering, let's start out with the first part of the equation. How are the labor resources in your neck of the woods? And I'm assuming you sound like you're growing grass 12 months a year up there. So what's the labor situation like in New Zealand for golf course work?
Yeah, the winter here is probably akin to a northern Scottish summer, to be honest with you. So yeah, we're growing 12 months of the year. We cut quite a bit all throughout the winter. Staff's definitely tricky, but we got a pretty good thing going right now. I mean, we're always looking for greenkeepers or skilled positions, but it's a small town. I mean, you're looking at 5,000 people in the off season and probably swells to 10 or 12 in the summer months because it's a great beach town, great surf, and everyone just wants to be outside. So like we have that attraction. So it's trying to find cool people that want to, enjoy the good life and, enjoy surfing and just enjoy spending time outside, whether they're fishing or hiking or whatever. So we have that going for us where we can try to find these people and give them a lifestyle where they can be done at 2 o'clock and go out and enjoy the rest of the day with their family or whatever activity they want. Huh. I think we're at 64, 65 staff for all three courses. So trying to keep that many people employed here as just the greenkeepers is pretty tricky. So we also bring down guys from the UK, the US, Canada, and some from Australia in the off season. So as opposed to going to Florida or something like that, try to get some guys down here as opposed to going to Florida or California or something like that. So that really helps us out in the summer when, our core staff wants to take time off because the school season here is 12 months of the year and right. The quote unquote summer is over Christmas, in January period there when actually a lot of the businesses actually close. And yeah. I mean, this country just about shuts down. So yeah, it's certainly difficult, but I guess the Supers in particular are doing a really good job of retaining their teams. And, here it's considered a skilled position. So yeah. I know they just started in New York State where it's an apprenticeship program. Mm-hmm. So here it's something like being an electrician or a carpenter or whatever. We'll put individuals through the apprenticeship program and do a lot of on-job stuff with some book work to create qualified greenkeepers and really just try to get people to buy in.
So at any given moment, do you have a bunch of expatriates? You got a bunch of Americans down there?
In the summer, yeah, when we get the quote-unquote interns. We bring down 9, 2 to 3 courses and probably 6 or 7 are American. And then other nationalities would be Australia, anywhere in the UK, Canada.
I was going to ask you about your organization now. Let's talk about the way you got it organized. You're the director of courses.
Correct.
And you have a superintendent at each of the three courses.
Correct.
And they each have assistants. And then you have those greenkeeper folks that are underneath the assistants, right? Just so that folks who don't know how this works in other countries, this is how it is in England and other places as well, where they're viewed as skilled positions. So it's super assistant and then greenkeepers, yes?
Yeah, there's a spray tech and irrigation tech in there too.
Okay.
Usually down here, they would call it a foreman or something like that.
Okay.
So each course has a spray tech, irrigation tech. At Lynx, we have a spray tech that is over both courses. And then, a bunch of skilled operators beneath them.
So you've been gone now from, the mainland, 7 or 8 years? I mean, you lived through the pandemic down there now, right? When you went down there, were you thinking it was going to be a long-term thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think we had the intention of staying down here as long as we wanted to. We sold our house, sold everything.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I knew that. So have you become a New Zealand citizen?
We applied for a citizenship. We should hear probably by the end of 25, and I'll be a passport holder.
Beautiful. Okay. So you'll have dual citizenship. How does that feel being from somewhere else? Not for nothing, Brian, but you probably showed up in a town of 5,000 people, and you probably stood out a little bit, and they were probably thinking, well, this guy's just here to surf and cut grass for a little while, and then he's going somewhere else. Did you get that feeling, or did they accept you right away that you were going to be there for a bit?
I think I was pretty well accepted. The whole key, right, is to assimilate. And I'm pretty good at going barefoot, and I'm pretty good at going to the beach. And I think we fit in quite well. And we talk about that with others that we hire from other parts of the world coming here, is just to try to blend in and don't stick out. You know, every now and again, you get someone that'll, you know, insist on having their shirt tucked in or something like that outside of work. And you're like, nah, dude, that's not going to work. But it was always the intention to stay. You know, it's one of those ones, if I do want to go home someday, it has enough of a visibility in the golf world that I could probably try and secure a decent job.
Yeah.
Whereas other, you know, I'd always heard these stories about these individuals that would be at pretty nice places, but really struggled to get home if you have to go home for health reasons or whatever it might be, your family, et cetera. So this was a good opportunity in the first world country, pretty cool spot that we liked. And it's close to a big international airport that can get you anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it ticked a lot of boxes for us, Frank.
Yeah. So, all right. So listen, I'll get you out of here on this. Golf is booming here in the States. We broke record rounds. Part A of the question is it booming in New Zealand? And part B of the question is, a group you work with, have they done building golf courses?
It's always been a golf mad country. Has it picked up? I don't know. I don't think so. And we're in a bit of a bubble, if you will.
Right.
And it was a bit different through COVID, because in America, you were allowed to play golf. That was the only thing you could do. Right here, you weren't allowed to do anything. So I don't know, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm sure it's on the upswing, but I mean, we've got the second most golf courses in the world per capita behind Scotland.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like 430 of them. And then are we done? Yeah, we're done up here. But Rick and Jim are involved with a project on the far, on the opposite end of the country from us, down in Queenstown, with an existing facility, and they're going to renovate it with Ogilvy, Cocking, and Mead, I think starting third quarter 26, if I recall correctly.
Who's the architect?
Jeff Ogilvy, Mike Cocking, and Ashley Mead.
Right.
And his brother's actually the super at Kingston Heath. So they're an Australian firm. They're starting to do quite a bit in America. Yeah, Shady Oaks in Texas.
Oh, yeah. They are doing quite a bit.
Fall Line Club in Georgia. Really, really good dudes. Yeah. And they're obviously doing a lot in the Sandbelt as well. They're on that neck of the woods over there in Melbourne.
Oh, boy. It's as good as it gets. Hey, Brian, thanks for taking the time to chat. It's been so great catching up with you, and so great to hear you thriving down there on the other side of the world. You know, we chat with people all over on Frankly Speaking, Brian, and especially that you're a local guy and just said, hey, this is where we're going. I really like it here. I can go barefoot. I can do a beach. I can grow grass on the other side of the world. I think that's exactly what Bob Emmons would have hoped he prepared you for, and I'm sure your dad had imagined when you were bombing around the club that something like this would be available. And so congratulations. Glad to see you going really well. I'm always happy to see you at the farm when you come and visit. And maybe we'll get together if I get a chance to visit next year.
Yeah, we got to get you down here, Frank. So I think you'd appreciate it.
It'll be great fun. I'm with Brian Palmer, the director of courses, Tara Eady. And Brian, why don't you say it? How do you pronounce it?
The Tara Eady Golf Club and Teatai Links.
Teatai Links. Very good. Brian Palmer, everybody. I'm Frank Rossi. This is Frankly Speaking. Thanks for taking the time to join us. Big thanks to Brian Palmer. Frankly Speaking is available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts through TurfNet Radio, leave us a review. On Spotify, you can view us directly at Frankly Speaking. Frankly Speaking is in its 12th season, and we thank, again, Frostbreak Technologies, Dryjack Services, and Plant Food Company for the support that makes us possible. Take a minute and explore what they've got to offer. Frankly Speaking is produced at Rep Studios in downtown Ithaca, New York by Nate Richardson. Artwork and music by Nicole and Tucker Rossi. Support from Peter McCormick, John Kiger, and John Reitman, and all the staff and services at turfnet.com. I'm Frank Rossi. Thank you for joining me.